We're going to learn today a few stories about Hillel and Shammai. And when we learn these stories, traditionally, people walk away with the impression, ooh, Shammai was such a toughie. We have to remember that Shammai is the one that told us in the Mishnah, Shammai said, always greet people warmly. Always greet people with a kind countenance. So even though these stories will seem to show the strict nature of Shammai, we have to remember who Shammai is. Shammai is the head of the Jewish court, the chief justice. And a chief justice in the Jewish court means that someone who's very caring, he has his principles, and there's a difference between him and Hillel. But we cannot oversimplify the difference between Hillel and Shammai. When we're 5 years old, when we're 7 years old, so our parents might tell us, Hillel was very warm and soft-spoken and gentle, and Shammai was very tough. But we're not 5 years old anymore. We're not 7 years old anymore. And we have to realize that we're talking about great sages who had great midot. So when we're going to learn these stories that seem to point out the difference between Hillel and Shammai, we're going to have to analyze how are we to understand these stories. So the first point that's going to bother us in these stories is Shammai's behavior. Or Hillel's behavior. One of them is going to be questionable. We're going to have to try and understand it. The second point is that these stories should bother us halachically. So give us a minute to go through the stories and then try to analyze them halachically. Yes.
Are these straight from the Gemara?
Yes. These stories are quoted in the Gemara on Shabbos Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, in the second chapter, towards the end of the second chapter. The Gemara quoted the story we saw last time about the men who bet who would be able to get Hillel angry and were unsuccessful. And the Gemara continues with another story. There was once a non-Jew who came before Shammai and asked him, how many Torahs do you have? And Shammai said, we have two. We have the written Torah and the oral Torah. The written law and the oral law. And the non-Jew said to Shammai, I'm willing to take your word for it on the written one. What I see written, I'll believe you, that's the Torah. But I don't believe you on the oral one. So now, I want you to be megayer me. I want you to convert me to Judaism on the condition that you'll teach me the Torah, the written Torah alone. Shammai yelled at him and kicked him out with anger. He came before Hillel, and Hillel agreed to make him a ger. Now this is the first point that should bother you, because we know that halachically you cannot be negayer a person. If a person says, I accept all of the Torah, but there's one thing the rabbi said I don't buy. So we say, okay, so you're not accepting the oral tradition. Go continue living as a non-Jew. Be a good non-Jew, but you don't belong as a Jew. When a person becomes a ger, he has to accept all of the written law and the oral law and the minyagim. So how did Hillel accept him as a ger? So the Gemara continues with the continuation of the story, but this story has to bother us halachically. And the Rishonim deal with this story. In a minute, we'll discuss what the Rishonim tells. Let's just finish the story. So the first day, this man comes before Hillel, and Hillel shows him, this is an aleph. This is a beis, this is a gimel, and this is a dalet. The next day he comes in and he tells him that, what is it? The guy says it's an aleph. He says, wrong, it's a dalet. He says, but yesterday you said it was an aleph. So Hillel said to him, what did you just say? So he said, yesterday you said that's an aleph. So he said to him, okay, so you believe me, right? You believe me when I said it was an aleph. If you believe me that that's an aleph, then believe me on the oral law. What was Hillel telling him? If you're not going to take the words of the rabbis, then you don't even have aleph beis. You got nowhere to begin. So if you want it, take it all the way. You don't want it, so you don't have anything. And I want to digress a minute. I was once present at a Shabbos table where an apikores was also sitting at the Shabbos table. So this apikores started talking about the story of Avram's purchase of the Mara Samachtela. A Jew doesn't believe. So he said, you know, Avram, of course he had to pay a high price because all the forefathers were buried there. Adam and Eve, not the forefathers. Adam and Eve were buried there. That thing must have been of tremendous value. So why do the sages say that Ephron cheated him on the deal? So everyone sitting there thought, boy, the guy has a good claim. So I said to him, excuse me, buddy, who said Adam and Chava were buried there? They weren't buried there. He said, of course they were buried there. I said, no, they weren't buried there. So he said, what do you mean? We all know they were buried there. I said, no, we don't. Open the Torah. It doesn't say anywhere that they were buried there. It doesn't say it. Open the Tanakh. It doesn't say it. Who told you they were buried there? So he said, you want to tell me it says nowhere in the Tanakh that Adam and Eve were buried in the Marasa Machpelah? I said, yeah, it doesn't say it anywhere. So your whole story is baloney. They weren't buried there. So he said to me, what do you mean? You don't believe the rabbis? The rabbis said they were buried there. So I said to him, listen to what are you talking about. Why do you say they're buried there? Because the rabbi said so. You have no source, written source, that says they were buried there. So if you're going to take their word that they were buried there, then take their word that Ephraim cheated him. If you're not going to take the word, so you don't take the word for anything. But you can't start picking and choosing and then saying, oh, the rabbis made it up. You're saying they made it up, so who says anyone was ever buried there? You have no claim. So that's like a takeoff of this game that Hillel played with. I didn't say it to answer him. I said it really to answer the other people sitting at the table. Because I saw that they all started thinking, hey, maybe he has a point. So I said, okay, you got to show him that the guy's, you got no basis, either accept it or don't accept it. But what people will often do is what this guy tried to do. I'll accept half of what they say, and then I'll say, yeah, but my interpretation is better. So we say, okay, you don't want to accept it, fine, don't. That's what Hillel was telling this man. Now, how was Hillel able to be Megayim? So Rashi says, an interesting concept, Rashi says that Shammai said the law, the Gemara says in Horos, we don't accept the Ger who says I'll accept everything but one thing. We tell him, go be a good non-Jew, we have no interest here. Hillel, I'll get you 1 second, Hillel said, says Rashi, he relied on his wisdom that ultimately he'll get him accustomed to accept the words of the rabbis, our tradition, because this, Hillel held, is not considered a person who doesn't accept the words of the rabbis, but rather he didn't believe that God gave us the oral law. It's not that Rashi here makes a distinction. If a person says, I don't buy the oral law, so then we can't accept it. If a person says, okay, you guys say the oral law, but it's not God-given, for some reason Rashi says that that Hillel could have accepted him. And therefore, Hillel figured, I'm going to be able to convince him that this is, that I either accept it all or you have no Torah. And once he accepts that, then he'll realize that that was also God-given. So Rashi makes this sort of like a pshara. Rashi has to contend with this question. How does this work? So that's how Rashi explains it. Obviously others are going to explain it differently, but we have to recognize that this story is problematic. How does that work? How are you the guy or person? Because you know that you're going to be able to convince him in the future, so convince him now. The Gemara doesn't say he convinced him now. The Gemara says he was Megayer him, and then... And this is going to have ramifications. However we're going to explain the story is going to have ramifications to how we understand the halacha. So we're not learning halacha, we're learning the story, but because it's relevant to a lot of the people present here, most of the class today, so I figured we have to explain a little bit more. Another story the Gemara brings.
How could Hillel convert him as only one person that in?
Oh, so obviously it means with his court. He didn't do it alone. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
The Gemara very often mentions a person and doesn't mention the fact that all his betim convened on it. The Gemara says Rav Yehuda Hanasi compiled the Mishnah. He didn't do it alone. It wasn't a one-man job. It was him and his court. That's why when he made a Stam Mishnah, it had the power of Rabbim. Yeah, the Gemara doesn't mention it very often. Good. It's like a given. Another story the Gemara brings us, a non-Jew came before Shammai and said, I want you to convert me on condition that you teach me the whole Torah when I'm standing on one foot. So the Gemara says an interesting term, which also needs definition. The Gemara says, for some reason, Shammai had this measuring stick that they used to build with, that when they measured a building, they had this like yardstick. And Shammai took that yardstick and pushed him off, like he's standing on one foot, and Shammai pushes him off balance with this stick and says, leave. We're not playing games here. He came before Hillel, and Hillel said, fine, you want to learn the whole Torah on one foot? Here's the whole Torah. What you hate, don't do to your friend. That's the whole Torah. Everything else is explanations to this concept. You want to summarize the whole Torah? What you hate, do not do unto your friend. He didn't say Va'avto Recha Kamocha. Who said Va'avto Recha Kamocha? God. It's a pasuk in the Torah, right? Va'avto Recha Kamocha is a pasuk in the Torah. Rabbi Akiva said it. There were sages who said it. But the first one who said it was God. It's in the Torah. Parshas Kedoshim. That's not what Hillel told him. Hillel said, what you hate, don't do unto others. And the rest is explanations to the Torah. So the question that should bother us here is, wait a second, what about the laws between me and God? How is keeping Shabbos what you hate, don't do unto your friend? So here again, Rashi gives us an explanation that your friend, God is also called our friend. The pasuk says, "Mishlei re'acha v're'a avicha al ta'azov." That's a reference to God. Don't leave your friend and the friend of your forefathers, that's God. So don't transgress God's word. So, just like you don't want people to transgress what you say, don't transgress what God said. That's what Rashi explains. Okay. Another explanation, Rashi says that it encompasses most mitzvahs because it refers to your friend. Here, the question is less burning because, in truth, when a person comes to Ger, he doesn't have to know all the mitzvot. A person has to know, in general, the concept of mitzvot. He has to know a little bit of the stringent mitzvot, a little bit of the light mitzvot, and then everything else he learns after he becomes a ger. We don't assume that the first Shabbos, the person is a ger, he's keeping Shabbos the way he should. He's keeping the basics, and it's a lifelong learning process, and you're supposed to learn as much as you can, as soon as you can. Those people who, after ger, leave Machon Meir quickly are making a big mistake. Because when you become a ger, that just means now you're ready to start learning. It doesn't mean you've reached a point where now you can keep everything. You can. It's like a child becomes bar mitzvah and I can keep everything. He's better off than a person who becomes a ger. A child who becomes bar mitzvah grew up in a home where he knows what to do. But a person who became a ger, so he's starting from scratch. He's starting from 2 years old. So after 2 years, okay, he's reached 5 years old, 7 years old. Still got a long way to go. So that's why we encourage everyone after they finish the gear here to continue learning. You don't want to learn here, learn somewhere else, but you got to learn. So here it's a little bit less problematic what Hillel told him. However, we'll understand how he explained to him the mitzvahs benon lamakom, but we don't have to cover everything. The Gemara brings a third story that there was a non-Jew who passed behind the Beis HaMikdash, behind the Beis HaMedrash. He passed behind an academy of learning, and he heard one of the teachers, one of the scribes, saying over the following clothing you make for him. And they started describing all the beautiful ornaments of the Kohen Gadol. So he hears the verses about the beautiful clothing that a Kohen Gadol wears, and he asks, who gets those clothing? So they told him, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. So this non-Jew said, well, I'll become a Jew, and I'll become a Kohen Gadol, and I'll get all these clothing. So he comes before Shammai, and he says, I want to become Jewish, I want you to convert me, but on condition that you'll make me a Kohen Gadol, a high priest. Now we know that even a Jew can't become a Kohen Gadol. You have to be a descendant of Aaron. So that's a very specific family. Only they can be a Kohanim, and only one of them is going to be Kohen Gadol. But this guy didn't know much, so he said, I want to be the high priest. Now, before we continue, I want to make a point. This is very common. When we don't know anything, so everything seems simple. Especially in Judaism. When you look from the outside, so okay, I'll master it. Every year almost, we have a guy who enters the GEAR program and says, I want to become a rabbi. He doesn't yet know what it means to keep kosher or Shabbos, but he wants to become a rabbi. So I'm always encouraging. I believe that every person who has the strength to make such a change in their life, if they'll only have perseverance, they could be a rabbi. I'm a big believer that many of the GEARim who come through here can become rabbis. But it's not going to be as quick as they think it's going to be. When you walk in, it seems like, okay, I think I can master this, and in a few years I want to be a rabbi. This guy comes in and says, I want to be the high priest. Remember, there's only one in the Jewish people. But he says to Shammai, I want you to make me a ger, on condition you make me a Kohen Gadol. So Shammai again pushed him with this stick, and he refused. He told him, leave, we're not playing games. So he comes before Hillel, and Hillel converts him. So he becomes a ger, and he made the stipulation. So Hillel tells him, you know what? Fine, but you know, you can't become king till you learn all of politics. You got to learn how to be a king. You want to become a Kohen Gadol. You have to go learn and learn all the details of how you are Kohen Gadol. So the guy says, okay. He takes a chumash. He starts learning. So he's learning the laws of Kohanim, and he reaches the verse that says, "V'azal ha'karev yumat." If a stranger approaches the temple, the holy, he gets the death penalty. So he said, who's this verse talking about? So Hillel said, even about my great-great-grandfather, even about King David, the king of Israel, if he'd step into the temple beyond where an Israelite is permitted to go, he gets the death penalty. So this Gerrit, this convert, thought to himself, he said, wow, if the Jews who were born Jews, God says, you're my sons. And as much as God loves them, he says, but if one of you who's not a Kohen comes close, you get the death penalty. I, a Ger, I just came in with my stick, with my knapsack. I'm a newcomer here. Certainly I can't come forward. He came before Shammai, and he asked Shammai, could I be a Kohen Gadol? Doesn't the Torah say that a stranger can't come near the temple? And basically he was telling Shammai, I didn't realize I was disqualified. I couldn't have done it anyways. He came before Hillel and said, Hillel, you were modest. You had the patience to go with me. May all the blessings be upon your head. You brought me close under the wings of the Shekhinah. The three of them met, these three Gerim, that Shammai said, no nonsense, there's nothing to talk about. And Hillel was willing to play along with their nonsense until he brought them close. And when they met, they came to the conclusion as follows. And this conclusion, it seems, was a worthy conclusion, because the Gemara bothers to quote the conclusion. They said that Shammai's strictness almost pushed us out of the world, because we wouldn't have lived the lives we should be living in this world. And Hillel's modesty, that he had the patience to contend with our shtuyot, with our nonsense, that's what brought us close to under the wings of the Shekhinah. So, here again, we're going to have to say, like Rashi said earlier, that Hillel knew that this wasn't really a precondition. This is what the guy aspired to, but in truth he aspired to the truth. And for whatever reason, Hillel ruled that he could be Megayer, the person, even though there was a precondition that couldn't be met. This needs understanding. What we see here is an important rule in Chinuch, that sometimes you got to play along with a child's nonsense, or an adult's nonsense. When someone walks in, you got to play along with them. And sometimes you have to turn a blind eye and let the person reach the conclusion themselves. One of the mistakes that guys in the Machon make is when a new guy comes in, they automatically tell him, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, you're not allowed to do this, and you're not allowed to do that. And I'm being kind, because we all know it's not only when a new guy walks in, it's when you're here for a year and a half and someone seems to think that you should be doing something different. They'll still tell you, you're doing this wrong and that wrong. And in truth, that's not the way you're supposed to treat someone. When someone walks in, you accept them the way they are, the way Hillel accepted them. With their faults, with the fact that they're not yet putting on tefillin or tzitzis or whatever else they should be doing. You accept them. Now, you go along with the person, and as the person is ready to grow, he grows at his pace, and he'll discover things on his own. And this is a rule not only with people here, there's a rule with your children as well. We learned, everyone probably knows already, the laws that tzitzis, you fulfill more opinions of tzitzis if you wear tzitzis made of wool. So, when I was young, I taught a young kid who was the son of a rabbi, and he became bar mitzvah, and I noticed that his tzitzis were cotton tzitzis, which are more comfortable in the summer. So I asked his parents, I didn't want to interfere in the chinuch, but I asked him, do you want me to mention to him that really wool tzitzis is a better way of performing the mitzvah? So they said no. So I said, why not? So they said, because he hasn't learned anything about tzitzis yet. Why should he sweat during the summer when he doesn't understand the concepts? When he gets to it and he decides he's ready for it, then he can grow into that level of performing the mitzvah. At this stage of the game, all the siblings wear wool tzitzis because they learned it and they decided they want to fulfill it on that level. For you to pressure him, for you to even make him feel bad because he's not yet keeping it on that level is a mistake. That's not what he needs right now. Let him grow as a child. So he's bar mitzvah now. He's doing it one way. In 5 years, and 10 years, he'll learn this halacha, and if he chooses to, he'll do it without the external pressure. And I think that's an important rule we see over here also. Hillel took it to an extreme. Hillel was willing to play along with people on things that are completely wrong, but he said, okay, that's where they're holding today. With time, they'll learn and they'll understand. And that's the patience, the modesty of Hillel. And it's interesting that the Gemara points out that Hillel's patience is synonymous with modesty. If we think about it, we'll recognize that the times that we're impatient with people, it really stems from the fact that we're proud. I don't have time for you. What do you mean you don't have time for me? So I don't understand. So I don't know. Why don't you have time for me? What's wrong? If we're proud, then we don't have patience for someone. The Gemara shows us that really they go hand in hand. I don't think it's right to look at Shammai and say he was proud. The Gemara does not use that word about Shammai. The Gemara says he was strict, he was kapdan. And the Gemara says Hillel was the epitome of modesty. Hillel went very far with his modesty. There's another Gemara that describes a story that there was an argument between Shammai and Hillel. And Shammai's students started bullying Hillel around. They started telling him, we're not letting you do what the way you rule. And Hillel was so modest that even though he was the Nasi, he had the power. He was the chief rabbi. He was above Shammai. And he could have blown the students away. He didn't do that. And it reached a point that his students told him, Rebbe, we're embarrassed. You're so modest. You're willing to accept their behavior towards you, even though you're right. Allah is with you. You have the power. But your modesty has reached an extreme that we, your students, are embarrassed. So we have to realize that when this Gemara presents us with this story and tells us that it's Hillel's modesty, it's telling us that Hillel had an extreme level of modesty. It's not a claim, oh, Shammai was wrong. Shammai was the chief justice. Shammai was Av Bezdin. If you're talking about a big sage who had tremendous midot beyond what we can comprehend. At the same time, the Gemara is telling us that there's a level of modesty that Hillel attained that was above and beyond, and we are supposed to learn from that trait of Hillel.